I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness. Without these qualities, life will be violent. And all will be lost. Do not despair. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world.
Welcome to the Corporation Nation radio program. I'm Clint Richardson. Oh, I have a little technical issue today. My computer is in the process of rebooting. It's amazing how we have let ourselves become so dependent upon these little boxes. So for now, I'll be doing the show from the phone. Unfortunately, I think that's going to mean that we're not going to be able to have our second guest on tonight until I can maybe reboot this. But joining me in the interim is someone who probably needs no introduction around the RBN halls, Mr. Lark in Texas. How you doing, Lark? Oh, boy, we don't have Lark either, huh? Well, right. We're supposed to be connecting with Lark in Texas, and it sounds like everything just went to heck there in the last few minutes. And also Lark's friend Nikki, who is up in Alaska, sounds like an interesting story. And Living Outside the Dialectic is her official website moniker. And we're going to be talking about something that sort of juxtaposes last night's conversation with Mr. Michael Tellinger, which, again, I really quite thoroughly enjoyed. It sounds like the audience did, too. He's got a lot of great videos online. But we're going to be talking about something that is sort of the antithesis of what we were talking about last night, as far as I can tell. Hopefully I'm not wrong about that, which is communitarianism, something that Lark has introduced me to and has been trying to get across to people for some time, the way it sounds like. And this, of course, having a lot to do with the concept of Agenda 21 and how that's being implemented throughout the local economies. Just amazed now that I've actually been looking at cities and people requesting to find their Agenda 21 models in their own city, they're actually not that hard to find, and seems like every city out there has a plan, a sustainable plan, or a plan for sustainability with a certain year, whether that year is 2015 or 2050 or 2040. Every city seems to have an Agenda 20 plan already put in place. It's just a matter of finding it. And of course, this is the creation of the Stack'em and Pack'em communities, if you will. And I have a little concern, of course, that the word community is being abused and neglected as if it's always a bad thing. But we're going to get into that with Lark if we can all connect here.
You got me here, Clint.
Hey, how you doing, Lark?
I'm fine. I understand we're still hooking up with Nikki, though, huh?
Well, I had a little problem. I had to reboot my computer, and so I'm going to try to get back on Skype. Until then, I'm using the phone line, so Miss Nikki is going to have to wait, unfortunately.
Well, sure.
Hopefully we'll get this resolved here.
Oh, when we will. I'm sure we have a Cracker Jack board option this evening.
Yeah, I think it's more user error on my hand. I haven't rebooted my computer in about a week. And I've got all these sites that a certain Lark in Texas gave me to research.
And I hate it when that happens, don't you?
I know, and it probably you know, probably bogged down my computer. It's so much information.
I have two windows open, and each one has close to 100 tabs.
Yeah, dude, isn't it incredible? I guess you're like me. I leave these things open and go back to them constantly, and it's just the way I do my own research.
You hate to close them. You think that, especially when you only read, 20 words or so.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, why don't you get us started by just explaining in basic terms the concept of communitarianism. We're going to go to a break here in a few minutes, and we'll try to get Nikki on right after that.
Well, sure, I can do that, provide at least an overview. Communitarianism is simply a synthesis of the thesis, capitalism, juxtaposed against the antithesis, communism.
Well, that's simple.
It is capitalism plus communism equals communitarianism. It also is a dictatorship of the community. And there's the simplest explanation you'll ever hear, right there.
Well, you know, I did a whole show, explaining just, or trying to explain just that America is basically a grand experiment in all of the possible isms that you can imagine. And it sounds like that description ends up being fairly close to communitarianism.
Well, of course, today, I think all of us realize that capitalism is not free markets. It's not free assembly. It's not even necessarily free association. It most certainly is not free enterprise. It's nothing that we suppose it once was, at least any longer. We basically are playing in a card game, and somebody's holding all the cards, or they're holding cards that we don't think that they're holding, perhaps covertly. And I think all of us have that sense as well. Communitarianism is also corporatism, with what is also termed fascism. And it is also British mercantilism, what is termed today free trade as a euphemism. But in the past, it was known as colonialism. Today, it's known as neocolonialism, also neo-feudalism, even neo-Platonism. In my view, though, it also is human child sex, drug, and organ trafficking.
Transhumanism would be another.
Yes, at my website, I have listed a whole bunch of isms. In fact, I actually put together, I think, is a fairly concise list, though I hardly think it's perfect. And I'm sure it can be debated. But communitarianism is termed an all-encompassing school of thought, or ism. So we shouldn't be put off by these words that end in ism. They're merely schools of thought. And within every school of thought, there's going to be variances of opinion. It's part and parcel of what a school of thought entails.
Oh, I disagree. No, never mind. Go ahead.
And you're certainly welcome. But I hope we can get Nikki on, because I think Nikki has written really one of the best books that's available on the topic. And she's actually combined both of these books today into one. One of her books is... describes how she discovered communitarianism, just as a lay person, a plain old everyday American. And another one is divided in two parts. That book is entitled The Anti-Communitarian Manifesto. And part one is entitled What is the Hegelian Dialectic? And in that part right there is the best description of what is the Hegelian dialectic I've personally ever read. And I've read.
Well, that'll be the most important part of this, because this is all based, of course, on that dialectic. And that is the name of her website, Living Outside the Dialectic. So we'll be back, folks, hopefully with Nikki on in tow. Stay with us. Civil rights and dignity. You want some more?
should be fun tonight.
I think it is.
I'm going to put up my...
All right, folks, welcome back. We'll see if the Skype connection holds true, and it sounds like it is. Woohoo! That means we can have another guest. That's great. Again, sorry about the confusion and the complications there. With me today is Lark in Texas. Lark, why don't you give your website? I lost everything.
Oh, not a problem. You can find my research notes at a web address. Simply larkintexas.blogspot.com. Its title is Just an American. And the series that I recommend is the series that you'll land on. It's a 5-part series entitled The Sum of All Things.
Very nice. Yeah, lots of interesting stuff in there. It's going to take me a while to go through it, I'll tell you that.
It took me a long time, too.
Yeah, I'll stick the pile. Yeah. I know the feeling. Well, I think we're trying to get Nikki on the line now. I'll just have Nikki just break in and yell at us whenever she's in. But we're talking about the realization of the Hegelian dialectic on so many different levels. Now, I know I was just writing an article about Obamacare and trying to implement basically the Marxian version of the dialectic, which basically says that we right now are in the what we call the democracy. We are in the feudalistic state, although people don't realize that they're in a feudal, you know, system. We're basically in the feudalistic state of this democratic sort of... becoming socialist and fascist and everything else, and which is basically the antithesis that leads us into Marxian communism, basically. And we covered before that all the planks of the Communist Manifesto are now indeed in triplicate law within the United States or through the emergency status of the president and his executive orders. So we're really talking about not just the dialectic, but the fulfillment of that dialectic. And I think for people to really grasp what we're talking about, it's often easier to use, you know, stories, allegories, and visuals. So the way I'm visualizing this is that. You're born free, but immediately put into this caste system, into this feudal system, and you're walking, you know, down a nice garden path, and you can see the other side, and you can see your goals, but in your way are all these darn spider webs and all these darn bushes and everything, and they keep getting in your way, they keep clinging to you, and so in order to get one step further, you're going to have to accept the license In order to go farther than that, you're going to have to accept the credentials. You're going to have to be credentialed through a system. You're going to have to do all these. Ooh, what is that? I hear kids.
We have a grandbaby.
I believe we have Nikki with us.
Hello. Sorry about that.
That's just fine. Nothing more joyous than the sound of child. Yes, there you go. Well, welcome to the show, Nikki. We were just talking about, what you're going to be talking about, which is the Hegelian dialect. Now, I want you to explain, first of all, where you live and how you live.
Oh, okay. I live in Alaska, in yurt, homemade yurt.
And what is a homemade yurt, and what is a yurt?
Well, I call them dirty. And what they are is round huts made out of sticks and poles and various coverings. You know, really, I make them out of whatever is available to me at the time I'm building them. I build a lot of them now, I think 7 or 8 different kinds. And then I've rebuilt each one of those models quite a few times, too. I'm kind of sick of rebuilding. and I've been down with the flu for the last 4 days. So I'm
sorry to hear that. Really. Well, it's a hell of a skill. I mean, you can literally build shelter anywhere you go.
Yes. And, you know, so there's I didn't start doing it to show anybody how to do it. And it's ended up being something that people keep asking me. So I'm going to go ahead and publish a small how-to book, you know, with some hints and how we did it and stuff. But, you know, there are a lot of work. It's not an easy lifestyle. In fact, it's very hard. I live in, mine are dry, like dry cabins in Alaska. People are really used to them up here, okay, where you don't have any plumbing in your house or, you know, so you have to haul your water and haul everything in and out that you bring in. And I heat with wood, too, so that's another, you know, very laborious part of it, you know, so there's some work involved. So it's not for wimps. And I don't recommend it to people either. Like, I think anybody should have to do it. I did it so that I could continue my research and get it done. And it's never been done. The topic is just so huge and it grows continuously. There's so much new stuff all the time that if I go offline for a couple of months and I come back on, I'm just blown away by how the synthesis is being promoted all over the world.
How quick it's being advanced.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the term now, they've introduced the term communitarianism in so many places that it's mind-blowing, really, how it's happening.
Well, absolutely. Well, let's get into it. Now, Lark was telling me, which I didn't get to read, apparently, that you have an excellent description of the Hegelian dialectic on your website. And your website is nikkirapana.blogspot.com. So why don't we hear your explanation of the Hegelian dialectic?
Okay, well, what we did in 2002 was we wrote an academic antithesis to the Hegelian dialectic. So what that means is, is the Hegelian dialectic is the original, it's a piece of the formula, and it's an ancient formula. Dialectical reasoning goes back before Aristotle, and it's ancient. So it's been modified by high priests, basically, over the years. They introduced it on different levels. And where we're at with it today, when Hegel wrote his dialectical idea. And it's all about making people better people, improving the lot of society, forced evolution, okay? So this is the formula for change. This is the formula for transforming the world into a global utopia.
And nothing natural about it.
No, nothing natural. Because it's conflict theory. It's based on the idea that opposites fight, not opposites attract, but opposites must fight. So they create the thesis, they make that up, okay, and then they make up an antithesis to that thesis, and then they fight, and they get people to follow both sides. They don't care which side you're on. Just pick a side, any side. And then they fight until nobody can stand the fighting anymore. And then they decide to resolve it with synthesis.
President Obama is born out of the turmoil between the Democrats and the Republicans. It's brilliant! Brilliant! We'll be back, folks. Stay with us.
My neighbor, welcome again to this neighborhood. I'd like to show you something. You know what this is? Well, maybe if I press this button.
Imagine every person that you see is somewhat different from every other person in the world.
All right, folks, welcome back.
Some can do something.
We are with Larkin, Texas, and with Nikki Rapana up in Alaska, calling us from her yurt. I find that kind of fascinating. I have in my mind a teepee, but I'm sure it's more advanced than a teepee, more like a almost like a mud hut. And it sounds like a good skill to have, actually. So Nikki, we're talking about the you know, Hegel's dialectic. I'm going to have Lark read from your actual description from your book and your website what exactly this is.
Well, Nikki, I'm looking at something that I'm pretty certain was written by you, but correct me if I'm wrong. And I found this at an article entitled 9/11 and the Rise of the Phoenix. Although I'm not sure it was attributed to you, if I'm correct. Yeah, okay. And I know you'd like that. but just stop me if this doesn't sound like your writing. There's actually two quick paragraphs here. In 1847, the London Communist League, Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, used Hegel's theory of the dialectic to back up their economic theory of communism.
That's me.
Now, in the 21st century, Hegelian Marxist thinking affects our entire social and political structure. The Hegelian dialectic is the framework for guiding our thoughts and actions into conflicts that lead us to a predetermined solution. If we do not understand how the Hegelian dialectic shapes our perceptions of the world, then we do not know how we are helping to implement the vision. When we remain locked into dialectical thinking, we cannot see out of the box. Hegel's dialectic is the tool which manipulates us into a frenzied circular pattern of thought and action. Every time we fight for or defend against an ideology, we are playing a necessary role in Marx and Engels' grand design to advance humanity into a dictatorship of the proletariat. The synthetic Hegelian solution to all these conflicts can't be introduced unless we all take a side that will advance the agenda. The Marxist global agenda is moving along at breakneck speed. The only way to completely stop the privacy invasions, expanding domestic police powers, land grabs, insane wars against inanimate objects and transient verbs, covert actions, and outright assaults on individual liberty is to step outside the dialectic. This releases us from the limitations of controlled and guided thought. There you go. That's it's easily the best
that's
I've ever read.
That's the page one of What is the Hegelian Dialectic by Nikki Rapana and Nordica Frederick. We both wrote that. That page right there was probably the hardest page we've ever written because we had to explain it as tightly as we could. And, you know, my style, you're familiar with, okay, is very dry, hard-hitting. I just want to put the facts out there, and I don't want to give any commentary. I avoided the commentary in the beginning. But Nordica, when she, you know, she took what I had and said, no, we've got to put this in words people can use and relate to and understand. You know, from the very first line when she says, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, was our first quote on the top of that page. And, yes, that has been reproduced and plagiarized in hundreds of places. Because it is very powerful. It's a very powerful explanation of how we're all used.
Are being used, precisely. Yes. And, you know, Nikki, I have to tell you, I have read both you and Nordica's books at least twice apiece. And it's because I think they're very powerful, and I've often said so on this network and other places over the years. You know, I did not learn about Nikki's work and Nordica's work until 2004, Clint, because that was the first year I ever got on the internet. But lucky me, I found her website, I mean, easily within the first 60 days I was ever on a computer. And I'm glad I did. And ever since, I've been astonished why this research is not getting more airplay among all Americans. And I think the most valuable thing I remember about part one of Anti-Communitarian Manifesto, Nikki, entitled, again, What is the Hegelian Dialectic, is how you wove in an explanation of inductive versus deductive logic or reason. Did you want to expand upon that at all?
Well, no. Our thesis, and this is what, you know, the basis of all our research is based on that academic thesis. And we propose, our premise is that communitarianism is the final synthesis in the Hegelian dialectic. And what that means is after humans are forced through all these phases of the conflict with all the different names that they have, totalitarianism, fascism, Nazism, National Socialism, Leninism, Trotskyite, there's Mao, there's been so many phases. We've already gone through a lot of them. Communism is not the final synthesis in the Hegelian dialectic. It wasn't even the final synthesis in the Marxist dialectic, because Marx, all he did was turn Hegel on his head, what he said basically, and being the slippery slibbleth or whatever he was, okay? They're plagiarizers. They're all plagiarizers. They were plagiarizing other people's work to produce these works and to set this formula rolling. And the great final perfect synthesis to all the sides was going to be so perfect there would be no opposition. And that's the point of communitarianism. It has no opposition. Why? Because according to the formula, it's so perfect, no opposition can exist. And we didn't find this by studying Hegel and moving forward. We were confronted with communitarian program, policy, and law in the United States of America in 1999, and I wanted to know what was going on. What is this theory? So we followed the theory back to its roots and finally figured it out. And it took years of study. We had to read a lot of really boring, horrible political commentary. My God. Because most of this stuff only existed in academia at the time. And it wasn't, there was hardly anything online in 99. A lot of government agencies, though, so I was able to do quite a bit of research. I was shocked. I'm old school, where I used to have to go to the library and use the microfiche and scan, the volumes of news books and stuff, to find things, where I couldn't believe. I mean, I actually went kind of crazy, I think, for a few months, because I was able to go to Thomas.gov and pull up legislation and, of all the things that were available, I just was, blown away and reading like crazy. And I saw the pattern, and it was continual, that there had to be balance, that there had to be a final synthesis, because we're just, aren't we sick and tired of the conflicts?
Well, perhaps the reason that it's not being talked about is because it's everything. Everything that's being presented to us is in a synthesis, antithesis,
Well, yeah, and now you have... Excuse me. The Tea Party communitarians. Okay, Senator Mike Lee is a Tea Party communitarian that's been in the news. It's all over the place. And nobody's even asking what that means. This is amazing to me.
They're actually using that term?
Yeah, Senator Mike Lee is being introduced all over the internet on all the heritage site. The right wing is coming out as hardcore communitarians.
That's one of your senators, Clint.
Yes, he is. A very, very unrespected attorney in my book is who we're talking about, named Mike Lee. We actually tried to campaign against him, but this is a pretty impossible town when it comes to talking sense into people, unfortunately.
Well, you have yours. He's a communitarian. We have ours down here in Texas. Probably they're both communitarians. Certainly Senator Cruz is communitarian.
Now they're using the word. They're introducing it as this necessary balance. So it's being introduced to the right harder than it is on the left. But the right is still calling it communism. They're living in the 50s. They need to come up to speed. It's 2013. We're in the synthesis, and it's called communitarianism. And it includes the right wing. And every time I hear somebody call it communism, I just go, how can it be communism if it's a religion too? Because communism was atheistic. What you have now is a merger between the new religion with the communism. That's where the Catholic Church and the Mormons come in. They're bringing religion back into the formula.
Sure, we're talking about the new age, the new one world religious concept.
Yes.
So definitely, all right.
Yes.
Well,
and it's called communitarianism.
We will be back. Yeah, exactly. We'll be back, folks. Stay with us.
It is like a finger pointing away to the moon. Don't concentrate on the finger or you will miss all that heavenly glory. Empty your mind, be formless, shapeless, like water.
And Nikki Rapana, who I'm very pleased to make her acquaintance today, and the more I'm listening, the more I want to actually check out your book. You've been talked up a lot by Lark, but now to hear you in person, I'm this is a subject that a lot of people are interested in that just I think have a difficulty in understanding the complete structure of the dialectic, because again, I think it's so ingrained in every aspect of life, from your choice in political party to your choice in shampoo, even though every shampoo has the same exact ingredients. It's cognitive dissonance. Yeah, it's amazing. It really describes most of the concepts that we talk about all in one neatly, bound group called communitarianism. It's actually it's very helpful.
Well, most of our readers and supporters, and they come from all over the world, see it and have seen it mainly through their work fields, their careers. I get contacted by a lot of actually sustainable development planners who worked at the local level for years and in their own country or visiting other countries and working in the field there. Environmental science wasn't always so disrespected as it is today, There were legitimate people going around who had studied best use principles and all these things, The bait thought sounded good, Let's do the best we can with the land that we have at the public, disposal here. How do we keep our water clean and, how do we not poison the things that are around us that we need to live and thrive, So all of those things make absolute sense to people in the, in all kinds of fields. And what they're finding out and what they're writing and telling us continually is this has been driving them crazy for years, watching all the money only go into a certain kind of program. And it had to be community-oriented development. And it had to have this, it's called harmonization of norms, meaning that the laws in every country had to be adapted under this new system. And then if you don't incorporate these laws into your system and the bureaucracy to support that legal system, then you don't get the grants. And the only people that do get the grants are the ones that are going along with the show. And now, Amitai Etzioni, he's been down in Aruba buddying up with the prime minister there, and the Arubans are very upset about this. I mean, I've even been contacted by people from the Rainbow Coalition. And you would think, reading my work, that they would not want to read my books, But we're all facing the same enemy. And when you finally figure out it's communitarianism, you go, oh, my God, it has a name. This is what happened to me, okay?
Exactly.
It has a name.
That's what I was, trying to get across. It actually has a name. Now we know.
It has a name. Now we know. And I'm like, all right, Rip Tootie. I send out mass emails. This was in 2000. Okay, I was so excited because I've been trying to find for a year, figure out what was happening in Seattle. And it started from my neighborhood plan. I started out my front door dealing with this new kind of police called community police. I mean, it was all this community stuff. There was community police, there was a community council, there was a new department in the neighborhood that was rebuilding the city to be a livable community, you know, community. It was everywhere and all the documents and everything. I'm like, you know, what do you people exactly mean by community? So when I asked the wrong questions, I was labeled a conspiracy theorist. I had to go look that up. I mean, all of this work is documented. I mean, I still have in storage 27 binders of hard copy docs, okay? A lot of PDAs and FOIAs filed. I got tons of good stuff from the federal government because they had no clue what I was doing. And I found receptionists and, PR people to be wonderful. But once I got through to an agency and pulled some docs out, the next person that would respond to me was an attorney for that agency, you know? So I hadn't even finished college. And I was going head-to-head with a lot of lawyers. And I was winning because they didn't know what they were part of. Everybody on all the way down the scale, they only know so much. They can say this is a livability issue. And they can parrot these phrases they learned from Amicae Azioni, but they don't know where they came from, and they don't know what it means. They put these terms inside legal documents where there was actually actions planned against private citizens in the city of Seattle to enforce codes that increase livability by reducing fear and using that kind of exact language. And they could not tell me what they meant by those. I'm like, when I told Nancy Rising, she was a Democrat in Seattle who was trying to help me for quite a while, and she asked me to explain exactly what was happening. I said, well, what they're doing is they're increased, you know, if they're going to reduce full-blown fear. And she told him, she got so exasperated, and she said, I had to stop making up all these crazy terms. And I said, I'm not making this up. This is what they write in their, I got that from, that was number 7 of the Seattle Police Department's mission statement, which had been completely rewritten to enforce communitarianism in the city of Seattle. And that's what was happening. They were enforcing all these new behavior laws. They're standard across the country. Training landlords, revised noise ordinances, training citizens to work with these new community police that was actually a federal agency out of Washington, D.C. And one of the men who was part of the early data gathering, because they also insist that they have to have a complete database of everyone in the community. In order to build a livable community, the community council has to know everything about you. So we were actually part of that pilot test gathering that data. But the one of the designers of the database Compass program was named Gil Krulikowski. And when Chief Norm Stamper retired after the big WTO fiasco in 99, Krulikowski came in and became Seattle Police Chief and ran the Compass program out of Seattle, and then now he's Obama's drug czar. And the fusion centers that they invented are all over the country. This stuff has been going on for a long time, and we have been writing about it and exposing it all these years. And it's so funny that nobody will put it together except for, you know, the occasional lark, you know? And, I can give you the name of every person that I think gets it. That's how few there are, Clint.
You know? Well, and yes.
Lark knows. He's been out here tooting this horn for how many years now, Lark?
Oh, so many. I was going to joke just a moment ago, Nikki, and this seems to be described the attitude of many Americans who are simply going along with the program without thinking at all. And here is my quote. Hey, I'm only here for the payola and the graft. Mm-hmm. Where do I sign up for that?
Well, that is what it's all about. It is a reward-based system, unfortunately, as opposed to an honor-based system. And so we do have a giant hurdle. Listen, we're coming to the end of the first hour, Nikki. You can stay with us for the second.
Sure.
Okay, why don't you give your website? Because I think I'm gonna order you. I don't get a lot of books, to be honest. I don't read a lot of other people's writings because I only read. I'm like you. I'm a researcher, but I think you're gonna be an exception here. How do I order your book? Where's that website?
I recommend the PDF. Then we can send you the file right away. We're behind on the hard copy book orders.
Okay. So, what's the website for that?
It's Nord nord.twu.net.
So you made it easy for people then. Say that again.
Well, nord.twu stands for the Web Union .net. Nordic has had that domain since she was 9 years old.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to take our long break for some commercial advertising, and we will be back. Very fascinating conversation, and I got to tell you, Lark, I really appreciate you throwing this together because this has been an educational experience for, I think, everybody listening. So we'll be back. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Corporation Nation. Let us not unite in communitarianism. This has been an incredible. It's been a light bulb turned on in my head because again we're talking to Larkin, Texas, and Nikki Rapana. We're talking about finally. Thank you again for actually putting a name on all of this because for the most part. I'm sitting here and I'm learning all these different forms of control and forms of things, and could never figure out what the final what the shell corporation actually looks like, what the mother of it all actually looks like, and now this is actually making sense. Before we go on, though, I sort of want to do a little roundtable between us just to give people an idea. If cause I'm sure there's some that don't quite understand how this Hegelian dialectic works, and again, we're talking I always mess this up, but it's thesis, antithesis, and then synthesis. So it's been simplified, and I was going to ask Nikki to give her opinion on this simplification, which is the problem reaction solution, making it simpler to understand. And basically, let's just give a few examples, if you guys don't mind, of how this is played out. Now, we gave the example of, there's a very powerful group of people out there, and it's us. And in order to control us, they must divide us. Therefore, we have the Republican and the Democratic Party, the right and the left. Always a choice, always a conflict. And therefore, the problem is solved where our power is divided, and therefore the power is basically drained out of us, and it allows for this type of synthesis to actually take place, where these people gain control through what we believe is a legitimate political system, and the whole time it's designed to divide us. Take your pick. What else is a simple way to understand this Hegelian dialectic?
Go ahead, Nikki.
Well, I don't know that there's a simple way to explain it, which was why we wrote that. It started out as a tutorial to show people how Hegelian is set up with the problem, even though it's not always a problem. The thesis is not always a problem. Sometimes the problem or the thesis is something that was already in existence, too, okay? Like freedom.
So let's use that as an example then.
Right. Okay, so you have freedom versus slavery, and the synthesis or the solution to that conflict, and hopefully the people on each side want to kill each other, and maybe they do, because according to the theologians behind this formula, the best way to move the formula forward is if a lot of people get killed. Oh, then they really want the solution, you know. So you know, you can look at all the big wars, the final war, the big war. This is it. People are sick and tired of war. We must have an international court to determine these things in the future, you know. Every solution that you see presented all over the world right now is we need a synthesizing of all our legal systems so that you can't have an international court if you have sovereign nations that have their own system of law, like the United States of America used to have, can't have that anymore. You have to be synthesized with the international order. And what you have is, they're introducing in like South America, it's communitarian socialism. In the Scots, I don't know if you guys have seen this yet. One of my readers just showed me a bunch of stuff right before I got off the computer the other day. That the Scottish Parliament, I don't know if it's Parliament, actually whoever in Scotland is rewriting their constitution has written the Scottish Constitution as a communitarian constitution. And they're tuning this whole communitarian as the solution to their economic woes or their, and they think it's going to give them their sovereignty when they're already part of the EU, which is communitarian law. It's called the supremacy of communitarian law. Also known as the Act of Community Care. But the laws end up being this, a lot of the solutions are laws. If you notice, there's this big problem. People go crazy and kill each other with guns. All right, we need more laws to stop the gunfights, you know?
Well, so there again, you have the United States wanting to have more violence so that it can have more control. So you give guns away, you create the problem. Now you have to have a reaction or an antithesis, and you, develop a war. How about 9/11? 9/11 is a perfect example.
I'm not a 9/11 researcher, but yes. That's all part of it. There hasn't been anything that's happened since we found out about communitarianism in 2000 that didn't play right into this. Because this is the new world order, if you will, okay? I don't use that word very much, but that's what it is, okay? This is global governance. They call it that. And the goal has always been, ever since these people had their big conferences in the 1800s, we believe our thesis is based on the fact that we think that the American Revolution was a big glitch in the big plan. They already had the plan and they were going forward with it, and they were planning on using this land mass here for the big push. And they still think we're their tools. They really do. They call the American Revolution a minor rebellion that was put down. So you read English academics and see what they think, you know, these people that were born to govern, the aristocrats, you know, they have, lineage, you know, and they're hybrids. They know better than us. And, you know, and I, as an American, it just got my gander up. Every time I read anything these people wrote, I was like, they think we're just stupid cattle. They really do. And so a lot of my motivation in the beginning was I was so offended. I had to defend us against these scholars, these, you know, self-righteous academics. I mean, the Communitarian Network was founded by a guy named Amitai Etzioni in 1990. This was all behind the big Clinton push, okay? right at the time Rio is happening, Agenda 21, all of the law, okay? It starts with that. And it's based in this theory that suddenly just pops out of out of nowhere. But no, it's not nowhere. And that's what we show, okay? But they will tell you, it just suddenly came. It is so perfect to them that they don't think we're ever going to ask even where it came from. So part two of the Anti-Communitarian Manifesto is the historical evolution of communitarian thinking. So we documented throughout the years how we were led into the synthesis. And these are that thing has been read probably a million times now, you know, on our website. We published it in the book now, too, and froze it in time. It's like, it's old, but none of it, I wouldn't take back a word of it, anything that's in there. And what you have now is people, you know, needing to understand just the basic Hegelian formula, which is pick a side, any side. As soon as you're on a side, as soon as you're on a team, and I'm sorry, but even God's side, because the Christians are coming out as the biggest communitarians on the planet, alongside the Pachamama rising of Bolivia. Bolivian communitarianism it's all blending at this level that I think that true Christians would be very offended to know that Jesus was a communitarian.
Well, the corporate church, absolutely. We'll be back, folks. Stay with us. All right, we're back. It occurs to me that this is, well, when we talk about the separation of people into political parties, into different religions, into anything that's possible, do you like American Idol or Dancing with the Stars? Do you like which Jewish comedy do you like? You know, I think that communitarianism doesn't really have a set of standards or prerequisites that you're required to be a communitarian or be in the system. In other words, it sets up the system to catch every single fly. You don't need to be Democrat or Republican. You don't need to be right or left. You don't need to think a certain way. You can be any religion. You can basically be anyone you want as long as you cooperate and become communitarianism. Am I on the right track here?
Yes, you are. That's good, you know, because that really is it. And what the problem is that you get to keep your own ideals and your own religion in the beginning. And like what happened in Bolivia in 2009, when they rewrote their constitution, and Evo Morales was the leader of that indigenous movement to restore, you know, community values. And they always say restore. Like this existed before, and they're just bringing it back. And then they said that their goddess Pachamama, their 500-year-old goddess, was part of their communitarian tradition. And they used that word to define themselves, and then they wrote a constitution based on ideas that they had been told about communitarianism and how wonderful it was. Well, as it turns out, the socialists hated it. Okay. The communists hate communitarianism because it is not what they are about. It's a mixture. And basically what happens to the communists is they see all the corporate capitalism and all the greedy rich show up in their country and, you know, change the dynamic of everything. It's not local. These are always going to be foreign experts coming in and taking over everything, whether it be a national emergency like during Katrina. You know, who ran the operations down there? A guy from Belgium, you know, NATO. So it's not, I was trying to think of it in break, you know, that I wasn't explaining the Jungian dialectic very well, because it's been a long time since I even really tried to. I have a bunch of memes and flashcards I've been making, and I've done a lot of articles where, you know, like I explained, one of them is called Lessons in the Hegelian Dialectic, Sarah Palin versus Ezekiel Emanuel, where I talked about the proposed Affordable Health Care Act, you know, during that time, what was happening. And so here's another thing. The Health Care Act is defined as communitarian in papers all over the Internet, too. All right? No, I mean, I'm talking legitimate media, academic papers, scientific papers, okay? So it's been out there. People, and the fact that nobody is asking what communitarianism is has led me to believe that it's a magic spell. I'm not kidding you, okay? Because it's like the word itself, if you notice, too, they put it three times in paragraphs, and there's all these weird things about it. And I started studying the religion, and lots of things helped me with this, because I'm working on a new book called The Green Virgin, okay? I'm thinking about, like, Pachamama Rising or something, because it's just an amazing thing to watch the religious portion of it now come out. And I've avoided writing very much about religion because I just didn't want to get in the middle of that, okay? And I don't like offending people with this. And the problem is once you learn what communitarianism is, and you start seeing it in everything that you used to admire or you still do admire, then you have some very, very difficult personal work to do.
Well, I think the church is actually a perfect example of communitarianism. And the reason I say that is because, you know, churches, for the most part, I consider to be anti-Christ. They are anti what's taught in the, you know, corporations acting as the real thing, basically. And these things are required, literally by law, to teach, you know, to promote the law of the land and to promote government and to promote, and, you know, so I can see why a church would be a very valuable tool, no different than a school under Common Core standards would be a very important tool in ensuring the transition into communitarianism.
Right, and the word common is a flag word, okay? That's why the title of our book is 2020, Our Common Destiny, because that is the word that if everything will be commonized under communitarianism. In fact, I used to call it communitarianism, you know. I didn't pronounce it very well in the beginning because there's also a hex on the pronunciation of the word. And you wouldn't believe how many radio hosts have stumbled over that one, you know. It is a hard word. It's a difficult word. And we've been told not to use it by mostly people on the right, laughed at by people on the left. You know, it pretty much didn't make us any friends to become anti-communitarian. And, so, you know, after 14 years of being a staunch researcher of communitarianism and continuing to be one of the Lark, I was going to ask you, do you have your computer in front of you?
Sure.
Will you do a quick search for Tea Party Communitarian for me?
Oh, yeah. I actually sent Clint the link over recently about Senator Lee out of Utah.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of articles. All you have to do is just type in the search terms, Senator Lee, L-E-E, Utah, and communitarianism, and it's all over the internet. This guy's he's become rather explosive just of late because of his pronouncements about communitarianism. Of course, he is called a Tea Party member, and that's
the kicker. And in 2010, I believe it was, I wrote what I called an open letter to the local members of the Tea Party.
I remember that. It was fantastic.
And I warned them in that article that they were going to be infiltrated and taken over and that they were being led down the path to communitarianism.
Oh, they own the GOP today. There's no doubt about it. If I might, I can tell you this. The GOP today is a member of the IDU. We're talking about the funding arm of the GOP, which, of course, is the Republican National Committee. What is the IDU? IDU.org, but it's the International Democratic Union. It's entirely communitarian, just as the Democrat National Committee, the funding arm for the Democrat Party, is also. They have control completely of both parties today. Now, I might want to step back just to what you said, Nikki, regarding religion. See, I liken communitarianism to a religio philosophy. I don't think you can separate them, religion and philosophy. Now, a couple years back, actually it was in July of 2012, in my local newspaper, there was an article entitled Texas Faith. Obama sparked a conversation about communitarianism versus individualism. Where do you fall? And I responded to that.
Wasn't that all the teachers?
Yeah, everyone that responded was a communitarian.
All right, folks. We'll be back. Very interesting conversation. If you'd like to call in and talk to either of our guests today, please feel free.
Nanoscale weather machines. All of these technologies exist in some form today.
Look, Mummy, there's no cloud up in the sky.
Goodbye, blue sky. Goodbye, blue sky. Goodbye. Goodbye.
All right, folks. Welcome back. We're talking about communitarianism today, and as Lark has been saying for many years, this is really, I realize now, one of the most untalked about, ignored, purposefully misunderstood and misrepresented topics I think that we could probably ever talk about on a radio show. And, you know, I can see... although it's difficult, that it's a necessary grouping of isms and concepts to bring in what we always refer to again as the New World Order and all of this stuff. Now, remember that the word order does not necessarily mean a clean room. Or, you know, that kind of thing. We're talking about an order of men, an order of very elite bloodline men who wish to do this to us through making us believe that we are members of a community, basically. Now, this is not to demonize, I have to stress that this is not to demonize specific words like community, because obviously that's a, it's not just automatically a bad word, but the way that these people manipulate and twist and assign their attorneys to completely degrade everything good about a word, that's what we're talking about. So, again, if you want to call in and ask a question for Nikki or for Lark, please feel free. What else, folks? I mean, this sounds like a subject that we're never going to be able to get through, obviously. Nikki, did you want to... go into any more about the dialectic, or did you want to?
Well, I want to talk about the bottom line. If you are going to oppose communitarianism, plan on having nothing, because that's where the money is. Okay, if you're not a sustainable business, if you're not promoting community values, you're not a community volunteer, and you don't brag about all the time you spend at your church and all the wonderful things you do to help the people in your community, this is the communitarian mantra. They go on and on about what good people they are. If you don't know how to brag and pretend that you're the best boy on the block, then you're not going to make it in the New World Order. Because the New World Order rewards the people who brag. So,
and especially those that, if you've got to adopt their rhetoric, right?
Yes, and you have to go along with, some people are going to get hurt because sacrifices must be made for the common good. That's a direct quote from the Department of Neighborhoods Director, Veronica Jackson, in 1999 during a telephone interview I did with her. She never went face-to-face with me, okay? Because these people, you know, will say things like that. And I'm going to repeat that. Sacrifices must be made for the common good was a response to me asking my public official why 13 people were taken hostage in two houses across the street from me for 3 hours while the police searched their drawers, their bookshelves, and under the beds, detained them in a room, threatened them. Yeah, you know, this is who those people were. So I'm saying sacrifices must be made for the common good. Well, you know, being raised by an American patriot, U.S. military, retired sergeant major, I said, oh, my God, that's communism. I mean, who wouldn't, okay? Because that's what it sounds like to me. So I started looking it up. So my first year, I kept saying, it's communism, but it's not. It's communism, but it's not. You know, because I understood enough about communism to see all these other parts of it. So it took a year. But, you know, when we finally found communitarianism, I went, oh, they're balancing communism with capitalism, and this is the result. Now, the Jesuits knew. I got publications that validated our thesis, because this, our thesis has never yet had an academic review, although 100,000 students from 100,000 different universities around the world have read it. It's been introduced in Vassar College seminars. It's amazing how many places our work has showed up and how many people are plagiarizing it now for whatever reason. I don't know. Lots of different reasons, probably. But the thing is why isn't it at least debatable? Is communitarianism the synthesis in the Hegelian dialectic? We show that it is. Nobody else will show that it is or it isn't. It's like undiscussed. Because if you're going to discuss communitarianism, you have to say what it is. Where does it come from?
The people that support the entire agenda for whatever reason, probably because they were indoctrinated to it in a college or a university or in some advanced level of academia somewhere, somehow, simply want to ignore your refutation. And they will not refute it because then it will invite attention to themselves.
No, here's the thing. They can't refute it. They can't acknowledge its existence because the whole premise is that the final synthesis in the Hegelian dialectic is so perfect that it gives rise to no antithesis. Meaning, if opposition exists, well, then therefore it cannot be perfect by their own formula. But that's what this is. This is a philosophical formula. A, B, you know. I don't know how many people study logic. I took a class in it in college, but I'm not an expert in it. And I hate that I have to teach it, but they took it out of it's not so much what they put in the American public education. They took out logic and reasoning. So that by the time we get hit with this stuff, you know, my dad told me I was trying to trick him when I was first trying to explain it to him. Because he, you know, fought communism all his life.
And your dad was an Army drill instructor, right?
Yeah. And I wanted him to come with me to these meetings in Seattle. I was going to the police station to meet him. Me standing up the rooms full of big, huge cops. They were following me around. Every meeting I went to, they sat next to me. But, you know, my grandpa was a chief of police in Wyandotte, Wisconsin. So I would just say, hey, how's it going? You want to take a copy? What do you got? They wanted to see what I was writing because I was constantly taking notes. I think I'm being unobtrusive and quiet most of the time until I would interrupt because they would never call on me. I had to interrupt. And, you know, the intimidation factor that they wanted me to feel, these meetings aren't at the, you know, at the local library. They were at the police station because they were police actions being planned under Agenda 21. our neighborhood plan, the pilot test, for what was called new enforcement, innovative strategy for enforcement. Innovative strategy. And Chief Norm Stamper, who was the chief of police of Seattle at the time, called the Fourth Amendment an identified barrier to the plan. So what they were doing was devising innovative ways to get inside our houses. We check for things like cleanliness, abuse, you know, a lot of terms that it's very detailed what they were doing back then.
He was bucking for a promotion, Nikki.
Pardon me?
Yeah,
the guy was bucking for a promotion, that's all. He was basically spewing the communitarian line because he knew that's what his superiors wanted to hear.
It occurs to me, you know, we have this thing in Utah, our Agenda 21 real focus group is called Envision Utah. And they came out with the most bizarre thing. They said they were going to make it a law that you were civil. They were going to create law that required civility. And I thought that was one of the most strange things I've ever heard. Now I'm starting to understand what they meant. Hey, let's take a call. Let's go to Bill in Idaho. I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of questions. How you doing, Bill?
Hello. Yes, excellent broadcast. Really groundbreaking broadcasting. I'm sure we'll not hear any of this from Rush Limbaugh's feet. You should have heard him go after the Archbishop of Rome. If you get a chance, Evangelii, Evangelii Gaudium, Gaudium, the joy of the gospel. The punchline of it is giving the local church greater say in church governance. I think Lark has done excellent work, and I'm surely glad that he finally got her on. I'm hoping, Nikki, that you get on with Deanna as soon as possible. This is wonderful news, considering more and more people are beginning to hear Lark in his discussion in regard to this governance issue. It's everywhere. I was wondering if we could mention one more point.
Yeah, sure, Bill. We're going to take a quick break just down the line. We'll be right back.
First of all, let me take just a moment to thank you for allowing me back into your homes. If this is your first time with us, let me extend a personal invitation.
Let's build a happy little cloud. Let's build some happy little trees. Very cold and it's here. We start out by believing here.
Well, the time does go by.
You're the creator.
Too quick to get a full picture of what we're talking about today, but I do want to thank my guests today. We still have Bill from Idaho on the line, and I wanted to, we mentioned this earlier, and I really wanted to get this clearly stated, because I think the most important part about this is something that you know, we had Jan Irvin, and we promote the trivium and the, you know, the classical arts type of education, learning your logic and your rhetoric, your grammar. One of the things that's being destroyed, as you stated, Nikki, as well, is the reason, logic, all of these wonderful tools that we have to actually recognize all the things that are happening within this quote-unquote communitarian society. That's being systematically drained from the education system and drained from television and drained from everything good. So, Bill, did you have anything else you wanted to ask or say?
Well, I wanted to thank her again so very much for taking her valuable time, but nonetheless get her on Deanna's as soon as possible. Considering Rush Limbaugh's workup this morning and his show prep, it was pretty tragic. I'm hoping that somebody can package this in a PDF or something to get over to his inbox. Considering tomorrow's Rosh Hashanah, we would want to wish our brothers, the righteous and the just, from 28th to December 5th, but the timing of this is all too rich, considering, you know, we here in Coeur d'Alene, and this is November 27th, A4, the young gentleman, Mr. Phil Membre, mentions, many will try to interpret and condemn this as don't help the needy, but a much better interpretation is quit making more and more of the needy, and that is exactly the whole entire discussion of this dissertation of communitarianism that Lark has brought to the fore so many times. It is a whole entire psychopathy of producing a corporate church, a 501c3 Catholic church in particular, that it's DNB is still international banking. Is that not so? I only point it out only by virtue of the fact that, you know, poor Rush, you know, he wouldn't allow any of this to be mentioned when Ashcroft, Danforth, et cetera, in St. Louis, Missouri, were pushing and effectively got Agenda 21 et al. NAFTA and GATT. And created this situation in the first place.
So sure, I don't think the words I don't think the words "poor Rush" should be mentioned in a,
yeah.
in a sentence together. Though, thanks for the call, my friend, and I agree. Thank you, thank you so much for joining us today. So this whole reason thing and logic, inductive versus what is it, deductive logic?
Yeah. Yeah, the reason that's important, and Nikki brings this out in her book, which is, to me, got to be considered when we consider this thing called the Hegelian dialectic. She points out the distinction between deductive logic and inductive logic. In general, deductive logic takes a lot of information and tries to draw a conclusion from it, and it employs the scientific method. Inductive logic takes one piece of information and tries to generalize from there. And oftentimes I find that they draw from arcane, even esoteric knowledge. And this is what I see happening. We are easily being misled because we conflate in our minds a presentation of sometimes deductive logic and inductive logic within the same sentence or within the same argument. And this is important to ferret out when it comes to how we actually process information in our minds.
Well, I would say that what they're doing in schools is that they're taking the most emotional words and telling kids to use those emotional words to get what you want, even from your parents, which is really, really horrible. So if you replace the deductive or scientific method with the emotional response method, then yeah, you're going to get a lot more, fish on your hook probably than right. trying to convince people about logic.
It almost turned into a big AA meeting. You know, tell us how you feel, not tell us what you think.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not creating an environment where people are encouraged to think. I am an outcast because I think. I've been told for the past 20 years that I think too much by all kinds of people. You know, because I don't want to talk about football. I don't watch television. I never really like television, and I hate the commercials, you know. I like movies. I watch a lot of movies. So I'm not against Hollywood on that level. I mean, I'm against all the communitarian stuff because a lot of it, too, is just, it's so much a part of our lives. And in order for you to recognize how far into it you are, you have to start extracting yourself from the things that you can. And my dad, you know, right before he died, he was too old when this started. And he told me he already fought his wars and this one was mine, you know? But the thing is he could never see how he helped bring on communitarianism. That his war against communism, his belief in his dialectical role against communism
yeah.
helped bring on the communitarian synthesis. And who wants to look at that in their life, especially in their dying years, you know? He's a hero. He had a big memorial. They just mentioned his name again the other day at the big ceremony down there, you know? To a lot of people, my dad's a hero. And so for me to come to him with information showing him that he helped his enemies, that he was
yeah.
part of a bigger plan, no. I think even though he did say I was onto something in Seattle, but of course he called it the socialist in Seattle, you know? He had to go back into the dialectic.
Let me ask you this, because this is going to be a pivotal question. We don't have time to answer it, unfortunately. And I apologize, Fred. I don't think we're going to get to you. Oh, well, let's bring Fred on in case we do. But it sounds to me, and this is ironic, it sounds to me, and this is what my eventual goal is, and now I don't know what word to use, but I want to make a community of like-minded people. Am I demonized for saying that word? Or, I mean, because you're out there and you're in your what was it, a girt? A yurt, right? All alone, which I don't think
I'm
is...
Not
a, well, no. You know what I mean, though. I mean, you're The most people like myself, like Lark, we seem to be alone for the most part. We do not have a support group other than our digital friends. And this is why I say I want to actually start a community of like-minded people who help each other. Not. But is that communitarianism?
Well, actually, it's okay with me. You call yourself whatever you want to call yourself. And I think on some level, what I'm getting to, I'm going to deal with this in the next book too, is the only way to survive within the system is to play the game now and hide in plain sight, basically. So the more you can cloak yourself in their terms, the better off you might be. I'm not able to do it. I'm too out there, okay?
Yeah.
Google my name and that's it. I'm done for. You know what I mean? I can't even pretend to be a communitarian. But you're better off, go ahead and use their label. And then do what you want to do and retain your own principles.
Well, I want to be completely out of the system, but I don't want to do it alone. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I want to build a community that's completely off-grid and completely without need of all these things that you're talking about. So is that communitarianism, or is that bad?
No, that's not bad. Getting away, okay, I went 250 miles out from Anchorage, okay? And I spent my first time, I spent a winter in a tent, in a wall tent in Alaska, because I always wanted to be a pioneer too, you know. I had to see if I could handle it. Well, I did. I got strong, and I got to really think through all these years of research that I produced so quickly. I mean, there is a mass of free information. You don't need to buy my book, okay? Our book is great. It's the key, okay? But you could glean all of that through everything free that's been online since 2003.
Hey, Fred, I'm sorry we didn't get to you, my friend. Did you want to make a last comment?
Fred?
Oh, I guess we don't have Fred. Well, thanks. Hey, Nikki, give out your website one more time so that people can order this PDF.
The website is nord.twu.net/ACL.
All right. Living outside the dialectic. I'm going to invite you guys back sometime, so be prepared. And I thank you very much for spending time with us today. And Lark in Texas, again, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for having both of us on.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right.
Is going to be a pre-recorded interview. I think tomorrow is going to be a repeat, though. Take care.